Hello and welcome to Epochs number 105. This slightly different, slightly special episode is a send-off to the Ancient Assyrian series. Me and Carl went to the British Museum to have a look in person at the Assyrian reliefs there, all different types of Assyrian reliefs. So this episode comes to you from the British Museum, and I hope you enjoy.
I mean, you can just see what a highly militaristic culture they have. Even on the bronze inlay, it's just us sacking cities, taking prisoners. Like, you come in and see a full-scale relief of what we did. It's just all they do.
And
is the Shalmaneser the Third.
Yeah. So again, it's sort of, they're Neo-Assyrians, aren't they? But it's from...
858 to 824.
Yeah, so they're Neo-Assyrians, but there's still a couple hundred years or more to go before the end. And even wood is relatively rare. Well, not rare, but...
They've got to report
it. Yeah, it was... It's not like they had endless wood, like in Northern Europe. So to be able to put your hands on so much cedar... was really quite something. And, even in the castles made by someone like William the Conqueror, say, didn't have anything on this scale.
No. If you were a peasant walking into this.
This does speak of someone that's sort of a conqueror of the world.
Yeah.
The amount of confidence, the inner confidence you would have sort of a boundless or endless confidence to commission something like this.
You can see why the Assyrians had a high opinion of themselves. Well, I just thought that all it is just captives and soldiers and just... I mean, look at these guys with their arms bound behind their backs.
Just any and every opportunity to remind people you're not to be messed with.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And there's just parades of... soldiers and captains. People being trampled over. The king there receiving all of the goods. I mean, they could have just left these as plain bronze, but nope, we're going to have it. So we've got the Assyrian army there taking a city. Just the most militaristic culture I've ever seen. This is good stuff. People bringing tribute to the king. Because, of course, not every time you'd have to go and conquer the city. A lot of the time people would just bring you stuff because they were like, yeah, okay, here's the tribute. A little monkey there.
And another one on his shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
In ancient times, all across the Middle East and Egypt, people would have dogs and cats as pets and monkeys.
Yeah.
Quite often, that was quite a common thing. You'd have a household pet is a small monkey. You wouldn't want an ape necessarily, but no, a monkey, sure.
It cracks me how human-esque they draw the monkeys, like the face and the hands and the feet. It's basically human feet.
Yeah, human hands.
Yeah. We're very familiar with, horses and cows and bulls and severed heads. Monkeys, I haven't seen many of those.
And it is interesting to see, you'll notice their fashion. So, he's got earrings, he's got quite a stylized moustache and obviously the beard.
Look at the work that goes into the beard. I mean, I never spend nearly as much time on my beard as these guys. And this guy as well with his flower bracelets. It's not a watch.
I think that is Ashurbanipal.
Quite possibly. I mean, look at the robes. I mean, look at these tassels. Look at the size. Look at the sword. It probably is Ashurbanipal, yeah. He's got a torque on his arm there. Bull heads.
Yeah. On both arms.
Yeah. He's got a pair of daggers on his waist and a long sword. So the king is always armed himself.
Oh no, it's Ashurnasirpal.
Oh, Ashurnasirpal II. I like the hand just resting on the hilt of the sword. I think that's very interesting.
And like even the details of like his nails.
Yeah.
Zoom in on his hand there, John.
Yeah,
like you can see like the cuticles and his fingernails and everything.
So this is a court scene from 865 to 860 BC from Nimrud for Ashurnasirpal.
So during the dragon.
But like you can't be destroying cities all day every day. Sometimes you have to actually administer the kingdom, which means being given like is that a drink of some sort he's been given, and you see the guy there with a fan, see the blessings of the god there.
An offering or a libation.
Yeah.
That bag is interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Graham Hancock has said a lot about those bags.
Yeah.
Because you see them depicted. There's quite a few in my line of sight right now. Quite a few of these different bags.
But this is where
Well, we don't really know exactly what they are, what's going on with them, they depict. But he suggests there's all sorts of, says sort of much more ancient rituals, more ancient cultures passed down their knowledge through a priestly or scholarly class, and that these bags, these handbag things, were sort of very important.
I'm going to venture that small bags have been used independently by lots of different cultures all throughout time.
But it's obviously really important because just literally within my eyesight, there's like you can see four different depictions of them. So it's obviously really quite important, whatever it is.
They probably carried like the incense or something like that.
So you can make the argument, is that important enough that you would need to depict it over and over again and put it in the hands of some of the most important people in your world? Why would you depict that necessarily?
But that represents a god, right? So it's literally a winged figure with a pine cone.
So anything a god holds is sort of couldn't be more important.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly got some sort of ritual significance. But what I've just noticed down there is you can actually see some of the paint.
Yeah, there's some paint surviving there, John. Get
on
that.
The feet. Actually, nice set of colours as well. You can see the paint on the straps as well, so you can see how they would have painted themselves. And the sandals. Yeah, I don't ascribe that much to the bags.
No?
No, that's
fair enough.
The bags.
I mean, I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know.
I feel like Hancock does embellish things a bit.
I'm not saying he's embellish.
You just don't know. That's
Oh, yeah.
And his calves, ridiculously hedged calves.
I mean, is that meant to depict Asher himself?
I think it might be.
Yeah.
I think it might be.
It's like the what they're calling the winged protective spirit. Well, yeah, he's going to be a Giga Chad as well. Yeah, look at Asher. Which one was it? Asher Nazapal, Look at his forearms. And the totally unperturbed look on his face. Like, I literally have an empire of terror, and it doesn't faze me at all, What I find interesting is how the eunuchs have always got a bit of a double chin. All of the eunuchs are a bit chubby. I just find that interesting.
Is that because you lose loads of testosterone and get loads of estrogen if you're a eunuch?
Yeah.
And so you can't help but put on a little bit of...
Yeah, baby fat, sort of thing. Puppy fat. And so the eunuchs are always depicted kind of a puppet. But notice they're armed as well. There's guns.
Look, some of the detail on that sword hilt there. There's a fair amount of detail there. They've got quivers of arrows, right? That's what those are.
Yeah.
So they're heavily armed eunuchs.
Got their bows. I love the detail of the handle of the sword. That's great. The sword's relatively long as well. Considering this would have been literally the Bronze Age.
even though I said earlier that, you know, it's quite a realistic, well, very realistic form of depiction. Mm. Also, the deciding to keep it in profile,
yeah,
and it's still low relief. That's if you get too close. If you get too close, the little alarm goes off.
Right, okay. Sorry, go on.
So yeah, it's just a funny mixture of being realistic, sort of as realistic as they can manage, you would have thought, and still heavily stylized at the same time. As I say, sort of 2D almost.
I find it interesting.
Or in profile at least.
I find it interesting how the writing is just stamped across the whole thing. Like on his fingers in the bag.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the spirit's carrying in the bag. But maybe it's just more pine cones.
But look, there and there. Yeah. It's very deliberately added in. Like it's of key importance. I can get why Graham Hancock would make the argument that there's something more to it than just, oh, it's just a bag. People have bags. There's something more. There must be something a bit more to it than that.
Possibly. It's quite interesting how they're winged. Yeah, sort of biblical angel style wings.
Well, if it is Ashura.
Hmm. And there are two of them, so it's unlikely to be represented as Ashura himself.
Well, they depict the same thing, like sort of over and over.
Yeah. But no, it says giving him a pine cone. I mean, that's weird, isn't it, right? Why a pine cone? Well, it looks like a pine cone anyway.
Yeah, well, we don't, like I said earlier, even the experts sort of say, we think it's this. Mm. They'll say, you know, with quite a lot of confidence, this is what's happening here, this is what you're seeing. Well, it's actually quite often a little more than an educated guess.
Yeah, but look at the detail on the end of the scabbard. It's two lions. And that's amazing, isn't it? I love the writing here. This is from the Northwest Palace at Nimrud, built by Ashurnasirpal II, 853 to 859. Portraying the Assyrian king as invincible and under divine protection. Proof that he wasn't. The king takes an active part in every inevitable victory. We always won. A magic figure, the god in the winged disc, accompanies him. That's Ashur.
See, when we said earlier, it could just be Ashur twice. Well, here, that it does say exactly that. You've got Ashur there and again there.
Oh, really?
Again, with the pine cone thing, if they are indeed pine cones, what significance it meant to in Assyrian culture?
We don't know.
I don't know. Perhaps some Assyrian scholars do know, but I don't.
The winged sun disc. Well, yeah, look, you can see the trim on the cloaks and stuff. And this would all have been painted. The necklace that he's wearing there.
Yeah, that's quite an ornate neck decoration.
Yeah, holding a rod. Some sort of symbol of office. Pretty great. Got an eagle head and a pine cone and a bag. And thunderous legs. I think the wings are fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And what it might have meant, because it's incredible for us just to look on it now. But also what it might have meant in the minds of people of the time, looking at it. Whether it was something to be feared or something to be loved, something to be revered, or whether different elements of society would have had different levels of
sort of reverence and awe.
Of reverence for it, yeah. You know, like in most societies, even in the ancient world, some elements of society were more pious than others. You know, some might even have mocked it or scoffed at it. Who knows? You know, like in Roman times, you have sort of in the early empire, people would laugh and mock the gods. You know,
I get the feeling it probably you probably weren't allowed to be terribly impious in ancient Assyria.
Well, we just don't know. You know, you've got people that like Juvenal or Ovid who are sort of just openly subversive, as much as they could be even. They would just laugh in the face of the priestly orders. They might have had something like that in the Assyrian world. Who knows? I sort of doubt it.
I feel there are just too many severed heads. Are you going to mock this god? No, not really. I mean, maybe. I think you'd have to be a very brave man for that, though.
Yeah, it feels like their society was probably extremely conservative.
Very serious about
and,
all this.
Right, yeah. And punished things extremely severely. And even from a lot of the normal cuneiform tablets we've got, I don't think there's much or any evidence of people being subversive like that. They were all sort of seem to be genuinely...
Yeah, you don't hear anything about impiety, do you? You know, like in Rome, which is probably part of the Greek influence.
Well, they'd all bought into the superstition. We might call it superstition, but they'd all bought into it that the world revolves, goes round on spirits.
Yeah.
And it would be foolish or churlish or just crazy not to believe in that.
I do suspect that the Roman impiety is a consequence of Greek influence on the Romans. Like it's the sort of like... You know, the rationalistic Greeks polluting the Roman mind with their education. So I don't think the Romans would have been naturally impious were it not for the Greeks. I mean, I'm speculating.
Maybe. There was certainly, even from classical Greece or even before, a strain of thought that essentially atheists.
Yeah.
That we don't need the Olympian gods to explain things. They're just not needed.
The universe can be explained in mechanized terms. But that's definitely not what these guys think.
No.
Well, yeah, the universe can be explained in eagle-headed deities with small bags and pine cones, actually, dummy.
And whatever this one's holding, it's not a bag, is it some sort of necklace or something?
A bracelet or necklace,
who knows what. Mm. But again, you can only imagine to them it was very important.
Well, this explained the universe. Yeah, interesting sacred trees. Some sort of plant.
Is that a collection of thistles, or is it more like do they have thistles?
Yeah, I doubt they even have thistles. But they've got some sort of sacred plant there. Tree of life or something.
I think you can see that they're depicting the same thing over and over again, or slightly different versions of the same thing.
Yeah. I really want to know what the difference is between the human-headed ones and the eagle-headed ones are. You know, what were they supposed to be? Maybe if they start translating Ashurbanipal's library and find out. Get the AI on that. I mean, these eagle-headed things, where else do you see them, you know?
Something.
This guy's got a crest. Great.
Something a little bit Mesoamerican about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Something Aztec-y.
Yeah.
But of course, it couldn't be more further away from that.
Mm. I mean, it's a very imposing creature that they're depicting here, and they're depicting it over and over. and yet we don't know what he's called. You know, it's unusual that we don't have a name for them.
It's just an eagle-headed spirit.
Yeah. But you'd think that on the relief somewhere, it would be named. You know? But these eagle-headed spirits clearly play quite an important role in whatever the religious life was that they represent. And what's the difference between the eagle-headed one and the human-headed one that has the same wings and the same outfit? They're carrying the same bags with the same pine cone.
Hmm.
What's the difference? Look at this stuff.
It's all very enigmatic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lost the time. That's what makes it sort of so romantic, though, is that you don't really know exactly what you're looking at and sort of can't know as well.
I love this thing. It's so
there were the standard inscriptions.
Oh, yeah. I love the fact that we call them the standard inscriptions. It's the stamp. So, yeah, if you can see here, John. This block of text that runs across it all, this is Ashurnasirpal's standard inscription, and we have a translation. I'll read a part of it. Palace of Ashurnasirpal, priest of Ashur, favorite of Enlil in Ninurta, beloved of Anu and Dagon, the weapon of the great gods, the mighty king, king of the world, king of Assyria, son of Tuk-Tolninurta, the great king, the mighty king, king of the world, king of Assyria, son of Adad-Nirari, the great king, the mighty king, king of Assyria, the valiant man, who acts with the support of Asher, his lord, and has no equal among the princes of the four quarters of the world. The wonderful shepherd who is not afraid of battle. The great flood which none can oppose. The king who makes those who are not subject to him submissive. Who has subjugated all of mankind. The mighty warrior who treads on the necks of his enemies. Tramples down all foes and shatters the forces of the proud. The king who acts with the support of the great gods and whose hand has conquered all lands. Who has subjugated all the mountains and received their tribute, taking hostages and establishing his power over all countries. And it goes on, but I'm not going to sound like it goes on quite extensively about how brilliant Ashurnasirpal is. With the assistance of Shamash and Adad, the gods who helped me, I thundered like Adad, the destroyer of the troops of the Neri lands, Habi, Shibaru, and Nerib. I am the king who has brought in submission at his feet the lands from beyond the Tigris to Mount Lebanon and the Great Sea, the Mediterranean. The whole of the land of Lachey, the land of Sui, and it goes on and on and on.
It's just, I'm the best around.
Yeah.
That's what you need to know. The takeaway from this whole thing is that I'm better than you, you are.
It gets better than that. I am Ashurnasirpal, the celebrated prince who reveres the great gods, the fierce dragon, conqueror of the cities and mountains to their furthest extent. King of rulers, who has tamed the stiff-necked peoples, who is crowned with splendor, who is not afraid of battle, the merciless champion who shakes resistance, the glorious king, the shepherd, the protection of the whole world, the king, the word of whose mouth destroys mountains and seas, whose bylordly attack has forced fierce and merciless kings from the rising to the setting sun to acknowledge one rule. What have you done with your life, eh?
It's one king to rule them all,
yes.
Isn't it? Basically.
Yeah, it literally is.
I think we said it in one of the epos, I think I did, where I said there's different cultures that encourage you to essentially show off, to not really show any humility, and then other cultures where you do.
Mm. This is not a culture of humility.
Yeah, yeah. You just want to dial up how great you are.
Yeah.
But absurdly, right?
I mean, yes.
maybe it's the 21st century English sensibility, but to us it's absurd, isn't it?
I would be embarrassed.
Right, yeah, you would be, yeah.
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 Yeah. But at least it's not someone who is lacking self-confidence.
Like commissioning a golden colossus in your own image. Like,
why not?
Like, if you could afford one, if you had all the money in the world, if you were Elon Musk and no one was going to even chew you out for wasting money, imagine, would you commission a golden colossus in your own image?
I mean, I personally
I still wouldn't.
I personally wouldn't, but I appreciate that literally every Assyrian king did.
So these balls are from one of Sargon II's cities.
Yep.
So they predate the Sennacherib things a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you can see they're absolutely gigantic.
Mm. And very beautiful as well.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is, one of the things that's interesting about them is that from the front you can see he's got two legs.
Yeah.
But then in profile, he's got four legs still. So he's actually five-legged.
Yeah. But obviously what it's trying to represent is dimension.
Yeah, yeah. So that you can see from both angles that it's sort of a four-dimensional.
Get them out. Yep.
You know the Chaos Dwarves
from
Warhammer? They're obviously inspired.
Yes. The other pierce in the bat.
I love the detail on the wings, the symmetry of the feathers.
Mm. I think when these were brought here, they had to be cut into a few pieces.
Really?
Yeah, because they're just too heavy to put on ships and things.
I can believe it.
And they've put them back together sort of fairly seamlessly.
But again, the actual anatomical accuracy for a bull, like the bull's legs there, I mean, it just looks brilliant.
What's interesting is that that one's got hooves, like the bull. This one's got much more lion-type feet.
It's just such good quality for like 865 BC compared to like the early Greek statues at the same time, which are totally, totally primitive.
And the amount of time and effort that's gone into it.
And just how smooth, right?
And these would have been flanked a gate into one of his cities. And so everyone would be forced to walk between them.
Der Sargon, or something. That's what it's called.